Second podcast of the week for the Viking and Valhalla project, and doing a little bit extra this week because I have I've ran into a couple of things that I kind of wanted to touch on, and this podcast is a great way to kind of get things off my chest and get it out there, and keeps me from having to post like insignificant things onto social media that would be highly incomplete. So this topic of today is kind of about giving up. This is something that's been big on the forefront of my mind throughout my life, and hearing the terms and agreements of depression that people have come up with in their heads, and reasons they should give up and reasons they shouldn't try. I wanted to address some of those, kind of give you my take on the way I perceive depression, suicide, giving up, lack of goals, things of that nature, and see where you guys stand with it, see what you think. So this is just my take, and this is not this isn't something that's been clinically tested or anything like that. This is just literally my take. So when I talk about depression, I break it down in a couple different ways. I think the word, first and foremost, is too vague. I think people are saying, I'm sad, so therefore I'm depressed, or I'm hungry, so I'm depressed, or something didn't go my way, and so now I'm depressed. And I think that there needs to be a definite definition difference between sadness, disappointment, depression. And at one period of time, from my understanding, drugs that were meant to treat depression worked on something like 7 out of 10 practitioners, or 7 out of 10 people suffering from depression. Now, what's ended up happening today is that level's much, much lower, that the depression medication isn't working. So the difference that I could see is that the people that it was working on were hospitalized individuals with depression so bad that they couldn't function, and that the medicine had gone in and helped them. So somewhere along the line, and it looks like it may have been in the 60s, the definition of depression got changed, and it became a broad spectrum, just like we see today with loose word usage. A broad spectrum of things were covered inside of depression that the medication itself wasn't made to cover, I guess. So here's how I see the depression issue. If it's clinical, if there's a chemical imbalance, this isn't really what I'm talking about. I'm talking about people throwing around this word loosely, this word depression. First, I see it as imagination. There's an imagination level depression, and that's thoughts of the future, and it's not a good future that you're imagining. I was speaking to a student last night, and I said, can you define the term worry for me? And he said there's no good definition that he could think of. So I said, here's the definition of worry that I use: the complete and total focus on the worst possible imagined outcome. And that's worry. So there's a Buddhist saying, if there's something you can do about a situation, then why worry? If there's nothing you can do about a situation, then why worry? So that first one, being imagination, is just what it is: the fear of your imagination. And the imagination that you have could be based a little bit on your history. So history is another one that I have. Your experiences in the past were bad, therefore you perceive that the only logical outcome is your experiences in the future are going to be bad. And as far as I can tell, that could be largely true. If you don't have the tools to change the results that you're, like if you were raised poor, and there's no way that somebody can give you tools of wealth from that family. If you were raised poor, they're poor. So if you're raised poor and you didn't develop the tools to not be poor, poor is likely in your future, or at least money problems. So imagination and history, I think, play a big role. And I'm bringing these things up like this because if you're suffering from thoughts of giving up or thoughts of personal value issues, maybe this could help you break it down to where you could find a way to see through the fog. That's my goal here today. Programming. That's the third one. So this would be either social programming, or this would be family programming, or maybe it's something that you did yourself on accident or purpose. So there's just so many variables that walk into any one singular outcome that it's hard to pin these things down. So we've gone from imagination to history to programming. And one example of programming would be, let's say, your mother wakes up every day and tells you you're going to be a failure for the rest of your life. And you hear this from early ages on. Well, that's your baseline. That's where you're working from, and that's also the oftentimes the pinnacle of the reach right there is, well, I'm a failure now, so I'm going to go and I guess I'm going to be another failure because I was told that from day one. And it's important, I think, when talking to kids to be very cautious about telling them what they can't do. Because I don't think that we actually know. The world is changing pretty quick. So an example was I had two major dreams when I was little. One of them was I wanted to be a jet fighter pilot. The other one was I wanted to be a Formula One race car driver. Now, what's the real reality behind these things? I don't know. But I was told that I wasn't good enough as a Formula One race car driver. And it was just a single passing comment in a conversation. You got to be pretty good for that. You're probably not good enough for that. And I was like, all right. So in sixth grade, I quit. Never even got behind the wheel of a go-kart. I just quit. And it ended me. The other one, the jet fighter pilot, I was told that I wasn't good enough at math. And I think that was in seventh grade. And so I quit. That was it. Not good enough at math, not good enough at driving. So there goes my two fundamental dreams. And I'm gone. And it's not a good thing, guys, to do this to somebody. And I don't feel like a victim anymore. I'm not talking about this like I'm a victim. I'm talking about this like don't do it to yourself. Don't do it to somebody else. If somebody has a dream that makes sense, be supportive to them in such a way maybe that doesn't affect the rest of their life negatively, but still supportive. The next thing down the list in what I've noticed in my life is hormones. So there's a... it's kind of like an information function inside of the brain. If you're hormonally off balance, and there could be a million reasons for this, then there is no reason that your brain would have a normal method of function with a bad set of hormones. You wouldn't expect a machine to operate with the wrong stuff in it. So it's odd that we expect a human or an animal to operate with the wrong stuff in it. The next one, so the next one down, let's go imagination, we have history, we have programming, we have hormones, and then the next one is brain design. And so I call this brain design, I call this genetics. And I know that there's an expression of genes that can be turned on and turned off due to good diet and lifestyle and activity levels, but I don't see a ton of depressed people that are incredibly active. So I see this brain design. If you have come from people that are all depressed, then you're probably running into that, just like alcoholism or drug abuse. So after brain design, I have fuel, and that's completely diet. So if you're putting, there was a saying that used to be told when I was young, garbage in, garbage out, and I hated it when people used it on me, but there's some wisdom behind that. After fuel, lifestyle, your activity level is going to play a huge role in this. And then after lifestyle, habits, poor levels of thinking, a habitual way of putting yourself into bad situations, and having that be the norm and your comfort level will absolutely, in my experience, lead people into greater levels of depression. And then there's an interesting concept, time in the game and time out of the game. This is one that I've kind of noticed with old people and young people. Time in the game, old people can see the end and they realize maybe they didn't accomplish what they thought they should have. Time out of the game is young people haven't been in the game long enough to understand anything and they can't see the end. And so either one of these things can create discomfort. People get really uncomfortable when speaking about death, or they fear it oftentimes because they normally can't see the end, and they're showing it pure in small bits of imagination or accidents that bring them close to it, and it's a scary thing. I know to be brought to death because it's of the unknown. But it's also an odd thing that because of the unknown that people would start looking for a reason to die. So that's a bit of a paradox for me personally. And if anybody has any idea what that could be, shoot me a message. Now, after the time in the game, the time out of the game, I've noticed that there's this paradoxical self-value issue. Some people have this self-value that is just way too high, and the rest of the world doesn't match up to it, and therefore it creates an anger and a level of disappointment and depression inside of them that the rest of the world does not agree that they, in fact, are the most amazing thing on the planet. And then the other one is self-value that's just way too low. And if I think either one of those things creates an issue, because if it's way too high, you're going to have these expectations that are probably unmatchable. And if it's way too low, you're going to have these personal actions that are most likely not going to yield good results. And both of those kind of lead, they kind of fish back into each other and create continued and deeper issues that are a significant of importance, because it causes the next stage that I call the avalanche. And it's where when things look down, the behavior starts to turn down. And you get a little depressed, money gets bad, so you start taking in some type of alcohol or drug to ease the pain of that, and now you're eating poorer, and you have less money because you're using some kind of extra stimulant, and you're not getting any life experience out of it, so it doesn't have any even memory value for you, and it has no tangible value, it has no exchangeable value. It's just an experience of sitting in your front room or sitting on the couch, smoking weed, drinking alcohol. And then at the end of that, you have nothing left but just a moment of less concern of your issues, and the same problem still exists at the end. And so that, to me, is when I start noticing that the avalanche begins. You stop working out. You start looking like shit. You start feeling like shit. You're not, the cardiovascular system's failing. You're not out getting any sun. Your vitamin D levels take a dive. And so vitamin D, for example, is pretty important because it converts into other hormones that then express genes. They turn on and turn off genes. And if you're ignoring this cycle of things that I'm talking about, I've always felt that it turns off something inside of you, but now science is actually sharing with us that it actually turns off genes in your body. So this avalanche cycle can work both ways. So there could be hey, that's a good avalanche. Like, you're having some really good day, really good week, real good month. And how do you keep that avalanche turning? And I see that people get into those good days, good weeks, good months, and they get that avalanche of positivity, and then they'll stop doing the things that create the positive because they're just going to stop finally and breathe and enjoy the positive. And then the negative starts again. So it's like in a relationship with a woman. What works better than giving her flowers once a year is giving her a flower once a week and once a month. Surprising her with some consistency, I think, shows better results. And I'm negative at this practice myself, but the same thing goes into managing emotional states. There needs to be some sense of consistency, not just the spike up and down, positive, negative, positive, negative, positive, negative. You got to watch that, man. That creates some bad avalanches. Once the avalanches take place, that's when I start hearing the thoughts of suicide from people. And as a professional coach, I get a lot of them. And I don't do any reversion with people. I don't try to get them to talk out their situation and tell me absolutely everything that's going on, because oftentimes people are just looking for a sounding board. And I don't know if me just being a sounding board is necessary. My time's pretty limited. I'm interested in what it's going to take to get people to lead a better life, and that's the actual definition of a coach, isn't it? So that being my calling, that is where I put my effort. Where is the result going to be? And so when it comes to suicide, man, I wonder this. I'm like, how dark does it have to be? Or how dark does it have to feel? How lonely do you have to feel inside that having no life, it feels better than having a life at all? And there seems to be a couple of different people that look at suicide. And here's how I've categorized them in my time in life as a coach, as a person that seems to attract this type of person periodically into my life. There's the guy that is the burden, and these are self-diagnoses. These are people that are saying this, that I'm a burden. There's the waste. I'm a waste. I'm worth nothing. I shouldn't be here. There's the misplaced in time, and I was born in the wrong time. I should have been born in the future or the past, someplace not here. There's the failure. It's like nothing I do is right. It's always bad. It's always a failure. There's the indifferent. It doesn't matter if I'm here. I don't care. Nothing matters to me. And then there's the impatient. There's the one that's like, it's just time to move on. It's just time to go. And then it breaks suicide into a couple of different ways. There's the immediate suicide. There's nothing you can really do about that. If a person decides to take their life, it's a done thing, and it's a tragedy. And I don't have anything else to say about it than that. It's just a tragedy, and I understand why people think it, but you don't end the pain. I think you pass it on, and none of us know what happens after the death. So it's, you're just passing it on to the people that are behind you. And then there's that slow death, that low functioning stuff that's, a person just doesn't really try because they're looking for proof that something's going to work, but they're not trying, and so the proof never arises. Or when something does happen, they have a positive avalanche, they take a second to breathe and enjoy that positive avalanche instead of building on it, which seems logical and natural. And or they get a negative avalanche, and it creates another series of low function. So they're negative avalanche, they're not functioning well. Positive avalanche, they're not functioning well. And I think a lot of this comes from all those things that I had just mentioned, the types of depression, that is imagination and history and programming, hormones, brain design, fuel, lifestyle, your habit, game, time in the game, time out of the game, and your self-value being too high or too low. And then not responding well to that avalanche. The final thing is, I'm a huge vitamin D guy. And the reason being is as a person that has suffered from what would probably be a pretty severe case of clinical depression and suicidal thoughts, and I don't share these things very often, and I don't have them very often anymore. It's something that is... I've been able to manage and get by the wayside for the most part. But I bet my suicidal thought range was in the tune of 200 to 300 times a day that I had in the past, almost every day, contemplated killing myself for one reason or another. And placing the value of other people's opinions, even if they didn't even have one, too high on my pecking order and not accomplishing what I thought I should be accomplishing was really the major culprit inside of this. But I found it to be very difficult to be outside in the sun and depressed at the same time, like maybe for the first 25, 30 minutes. But after that, I found that managing depression in the 90s for me, when I owned a moving company, had a lot to do with me taking my lunches and my lunch hours. And I would had a pass to the Denver Zoo, and so I could just kind of walk in. And I would walk in on my lunch hours to the Denver Zoo, and you know, I could see the animals, I could see the marine life. They have the seals right there by the entrance. And I would go in and, you know, look at the animals for a few minutes and just appreciate the simplicity of being around something very different and taking a break from my normal drudgery, the way I perceived it. And then I'd eat there. I'd have lunch at the zoo or during the wintertime at the Natural History Museum in the T-Rex Cafe. So those things were a massive break from reality for me, and there was something I looked forward to doing. And I think that's something that when it comes to managing depression and sadness and giving up, is that people start slowly eliminating through day-by-day events, whether they think their value is too high or too low, I don't know, things that they look forward to and things that they get excited about. And so if you eliminate this excitement, and it's harder to get excited today, I think back in the Paleolithic period, it's probably super excited to eat. I bet you were excited to eat by the time nighttime fell, and you, because elk don't like to be killed, and everything else likes the berries too, so you had to hunt and gather and get enough food to feed everybody out of this field that's in front of you, and you did it, and that's incredibly exciting. You get to live another day. And so I think every day they must have had this sense of excitement just to get a meal, as we're now, we have an abundance of fattening food around us, and it is taken completely for granted. So the simple excitements of life are very, very gone, and now they're being compared. I remember in the 90s struggling with driving a totally piece of crap car, like $300, and pull up next to a kid at a stoplight in Littleton that's in high school driving a Viper. And what that did to me mentally, it blew me away. I couldn't even wrap my head around it. Like, what is going on? Why am I such a failure? I didn't experience as much excitement about things as I experienced kind of just personal disappointment about things. And I feel like that's going along or happening a lot here in life now, is that it's just easier to find disappointment when you're, especially on social media, when you start looking at somebody else's life that, you don't know the ins and out of it, but you're just seeing the pictures between the downs, and their life looks amazing, and then you have to go to work and do something that you really don't want to do for money that you wish that you made way more than. So it's really easy to get disappointed. So I think that the value of doing things that you look forward to doing, like last night I started rolling with one of my guys here, Z, and I wasn't in the best mental place before I started rolling, but I found myself during the rolling process with a giant smile on my face and kind of laughing and having a good time as we're doing submission wrestling, submission grappling. And I need to keep that in mind. You know, I need to keep in mind that it's important that I look forward to doing things and I get excited about things. The vitamin D deal, I think what ends up happening is most of your vitamin D should really be getting a ton of vitamin D through sun. And because we're now living in areas that are colder and we can manage our environment a little bit better, I think we're running into deficiencies that are pretty significant because half the year we're not getting UV light. Part of the issue with a low vitamin D level is bone demineralization. That's pretty significant because it's going to cause body pain, which is going to depress you. It's going to cause sleep disruption, which is going to depress you. Myopathy is going to be an issue. Immune system issues are going to be significant. Decreased activity, obesity, sleep apnea. Vitamin D is a hormone, essentially, that converts into other hormones that then regulate gene expression on and off inside of your body. So it's really, really important. And I'm not saying just do a bunch of vitamin D and don't do anything else. You're going to have you have other needs too. I mean, full vitamin needs, full carbohydrate, full protein needs. And we had talked about this in other podcasts. We're looking for micronutrients and or trace minerals, and minerals need to be taken into consideration as well. And so I ask people to use Himalayan sea salt as well as a lot of leafy greens. And I've told people in the past, put as many chlorophylls on your plate as you can in every meal. The chlorophylls are where you're going to find a ton of micronutrients. Himalayan sea salt is filled with an entire laundry list of micronutrients that are going to be incredible for you. Raw honey, if you're not allergic to bees and don't have issues with it, raw honey I really, really think is something that people should not look at. I ask people to take raw honey, and they're like, I've been doing it, and it's not helping, and I put a teaspoon in my coffee every morning. I'm like, well, I didn't tell you to burn it. When I ask people to take raw honey, we're talking about 5 to 9 tablespoons of raw honey that are in a Nalgene bottle and then mixed with lukewarm water so you drink it like a tea. And I want to touch real quick when it comes to depression, the difference between micronutrients and minerals or trace minerals. Macro minerals, which would be the big ones, you're talking about your calcium, your chloride, your chlorine, your magnesium, your phosphorus, your potassium, your sodium, your sulfur, the big ones. The trace minerals are low level. They're present at low levels in your diet. These are chromium, cobalt, copper, zinc, things such as that. You do have to take a look at those. You don't only want to be looking off of food labels and taking in a couple of macro minerals or one or two vitamins and hope your system is. This is a balancing act. If you're looking at getting through the mental give up stage, this is a balancing act of nutrition. And I suggest that you start number one with your thoughts. You need to contain it. Your internal judo needs to be really good. You need to learn to combat that give up language, that give up to work. You're going to go work out, but then it's like, well, I can just smoke weed. You've got to combat that. You've got to do the effort. You've got to stop listening to the people like, yeah, you should probably just stay here and smoke weed. You have to get in. You have to put in the work. You have to understand that there's going to be weeks and months go by with you're not going to get the best results, looking results in the world. That you're going to have to do some work before you get those results. The amount of self-discipline that's going to go into making you a happy person is significant. Because the amount of effort that goes into making you an unhappy person is significant. So these thoughts of giving up, these thoughts of suicide, I understand that they can be motivated also by money problems. You have to have a better plan. So this is the mental thing. You have to create a better plan. And so you can't lay that burden on one individual. Hey, let's sit down for a couple hours and just help me map out my life. But through a group of people, you can piece together possibly a better plan that isn't overburdening. You're not texting them in the middle of the night, hitting them up with the woe is me's. Everybody's experiencing some level of discomfort, and you don't want to be one of those levels of discomfort because that's just going to compile onto your burden or your waste or your... you're a failure, or you're indifferent now, or whatever it's going to be. I think having a sitting down, and one of the big difference here is that between a dream and a goal is writing it down. If you have, I get people that come into the gym all the time, I want to be a fighter. Like, well, have you written anything down? I mean, I noticed you haven't shown up, but have you written anything down? And nobody comes into the gym and says, I'm going to do this job out there in the world that I don't really like doing, and that's really what I want to do. But it would be honest if they said that, because that's what ends up happening more is, you know how many people I turn into fighters that say they want to be fighters? Almost none. There's your average. And the it's a sad average. And I don't have a lot of faith in when people come in and say, I want to be a fighter, that they're going to pull it off. I'm not 20 years deep in this going, oh my God, here it is. Really? Finally, somebody that's going to do it. That's not going through my head. I'm looking for proof. And one of the things that I see that gets in the way of becoming a success at basically anything is this thoughts of giving up, and then which could lead to suicidal thoughts. And so that's kind of what I wanted to touch on for the day. And maybe give you some tools to get through it. And number one of those tools is a support group of people that can understand your goals and objectives, maybe help as a community hold you accountable. The other thing is writing them down. You need to write down your goals. If you don't write down your goals, they're just a pipe dream. It's going nowhere. That being said, that's really all I have to offer at the time on this topic. If you have anything that you'd like to say, leave some comments. Contact me and add your input. Love to hear from you. Otherwise, guys, keep training, keep moving towards your objectives, keep trying to find those goals, and try to make them happen. Try to make life something you want to live, not something you have to live. Viking Valhalla Project, we're out for the day. Have a good one.